it's Rebecca Jernigan, your tour guide into discovery, coming to you live simulcast from the heart of America to around the globe via the World Wide Web, terrestrial radio, satellite, and podcast. Let's journey together into the realms of the unknown to the known in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth. All right, welcome to the show, everyone. And today's very controversial guest is going to be Lionel Parkinson. We are going to be talking about his latest book, or his book, The Holy Virus. We're going to get more on that in just a moment. Special thanks goes out to all of the great affiliates of the Journeys with Rebecca Radio Network. So you can check them out and more at my website, and that's journeyswithrebecca.com. You know, you guys can leave me an email. Let me know your guest on the comments at mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com. Please sign up for the free and confidential newsletter at the bottom of the front page there at the website. Let me get right into my guest today. Again, Lionel Parkinson, the author of the book, The Holy Virus. You know, this topic is going to revolve around the Christian issue of the bloodshed sacrifice for the remission of man's sins. The author is going to make a case that Jesus was sent by the Creator for just the opposite reason, to teach against blood sacrifices, animal or human. And he's going to use many examples in the Bible to make his case. Lionel has a unique viewpoint because he is a document examiner, so he comes at this from a totally objective as opposed to a subjective viewpoint. This is absolutely going to be a fascinating show. You guys are going to want to stick around for this one, so don't go away, and we're going to be right back.
Questions about your love life or your job? Get your private psychic reading from Rebecca. Call to schedule an appointment at 1-888-958-2768. That number again is 1-888-958-2768.
Check out Rebecca's website for the latest Journeys news and more. Log on to www.journeyswithrebecca.com.
All right, welcome back to the show. And my guest today, as I announced earlier, is Lionel Parkinson. He is the author of the book called The Holy Virus. First of all, welcome to the show, Lionel. I'm very happy to have you here today.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on your program.
Well, and this is such a extraordinary topic. I'm not going to use the word controversial because for me it's not controversial. It's very enlightening information. But what I think is so unique is about you, the individual, and how you brought this forward based on your background and what you do. And I think that's really what makes this a very unique approach to this topic that we're talking about today. So what I want to do is I want you to kind of let the audience know a little bit about what it was that you were doing, how you did it, and of course your unique approach based on your actual profession in life.
Yes, okay. The reason I wrote this book is I found that in discussing biblical matters with a lot of Christians and Catholics, and primarily just Christians and Catholics, because where I come from, there's not too many Muslims or people of the Jewish faith. I found that all around me, there was a deep concern about authenticity and accuracy found in the Bible itself. And in my discussions with Christians, I found that there was still not a satisfied feeling that they were getting out of their religions. And when I was doing some preliminary research on the Bible, I began to find a lot of problems between the personality profile of the Lord that shows up in the Old Testament as opposed to the personality profile that shows up in Jesus in the New Testament. And by comparing these two, a list of personality traits on one opposed to the personality traits on the other, I found that they did not match. In fact, they were so much in contrary to one another, I could not find where Jesus was ever worshiping this Lord of the Old Testament that he called the Holy Father in the New Testament. So finding, based on those differences, I began to examine the very doctrine that Christianity believes in today and expounded upon so much, is that they state emphatically that Jesus died on the cross for everyone's sins as a final blood atonement to fulfill the old Levitical law that is present in the Torah or the Old Testament law.
Well, I want to stop you here for just a second before you go on and let everyone know the approach that you take based on the profession. On, you know, you're not just a researcher, but how you came about when you were actually looking at the Bible.
Right. There's a certain approach that a document examiner uses to arrive at accurate determinations, and that is by establishing first positive, accurate, known exemplars. And to go back to what I just said before, in order for me to get an accurate personality profile of Jesus, the only four books that give me that profile within the King James Bible was the four Gospels, the books that are known as Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. When I tried to list that personality profile, I found that there was a lot of different personality traits that did not necessarily work with one another perfectly. So I began to investigate how accurate these books really were and how reliable I can rely on them as far as giving me a proper known exemplar to start with. Because if I don't have a good profile to work off, I can't continue the investigation. And I found in discussing this with Christians that this is also what was the underlying problem that they had as well, but they didn't know how to address it. They didn't understand how to properly attack the Bible from an examiner's point of view. They've always been taught to study the Bible and accept just whatever it says, irregardless as being infallible. So when I found that there was some reliable traits that I could use and others that did not quite match up with those traits, I began to start looking outside the Bible, such as some of the other Gospels. And I found some of those could be used as well. And I was beginning to formulate a good personality profile that I could begin to rely on so that I could then match up that profile up against the profile of the Lord of the Old Testament. And when I did that comparison, I found a complete and total different Lord or a completely different doctrine. And that was pretty much my approach throughout this whole study. Since I do not come from any particular religion, I approach this the same way I approach any case in court. When I'm asked to examine any document, the first thing I ask the attorney is, I need to know, what do you have for me that I can use as known exemplars to establish a particular author as some well-known handwriting or well-known writings of that particular author that I can rely on that are undisputed and cannot be refuted by anyone. And then I can move forward and compare that against any questioned document. And that's the approach that I took in examining the Bible.
Okay. And really, the whole topic here on the holy virus is really about, and we talked about that in the very beginning, or you did rather, the bloodshed sacrifice for the remissions of man's sins.
Correct, and that goes back to Exodus 20, chapter 24, verse 8, where Moses was given this, what was called the blood of the covenant, where he would sacrifice an oxen and pour the kill the animal, take the blood, and then sprinkle it on the people, and this would represent their initiation into this particular tribe. Later on, this practice became a institutionalized belief that by killing the animal, you're killing your sin, and that animal takes on that sin and punishment, and the pouring of the blood would act like a covering over your sin. And this is believed by Judaism and Christianity as the Old Testament law that is being referred to in Leviticus chapter 17, verse 11, I believe.
Okay.
And the belief was that without the shedding of blood, there is no remission of sins. The problem I had with that is that I could not find in the teachings of the four Gospels where Jesus is, you know, being quoted by these authors that we are told are Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. I could not find in the New Testament Jesus teaching that he came for the purpose of dying for anyone's sins as this final blood atonement. Instead, what I found was direct teachings that went contrary to this Old Testament, and this is the Old Testament law, which is the gist of my book, is that if after studying the true personality traits of Jesus, if I by going to the true source of the doctrine of him and comparing it to the old law, and I find a major conflict, then that information needs to be revealed, and revealed in a way that is done professional and not from a religion point of view, which is where I come from.
Right. Well, and I will tell you is, and you know, I'll be, for everyone out there that's listening, I wasn't able to get through all of your book, but what I did read of your book was well put forward as far as you have no attachment to it. And that's what makes this particular topic that can be so controversial, that can make it easier if people realize where the perspective comes from. And it comes from looking at it from a professional, that's a good term, a professional viewpoint as opposed to an emotional viewpoint.
Exactly, and it's important. See, when I was raised in a family of document examiners, it was very important not to get attached to any party whatsoever that is involved with the documents itself. When I'm hired by an attorney, for instance, I'm working for that attorney, but I'm hired in a way to present facts, and if those facts find against him and blows his case out of the water, that's just the, you know, which was often the case when I was hired. I'd often end up making the attorney that hired me very, very mad because I'd often find against him and his client.
Well, and so that's what makes this so unique, this whole approach so unique. I am sure that as time goes on that, you know, you're going to have, you know, some flack over this. I'm sure you probably already have. But I'm very honored to have you here in order to be able to talk more extensively about what you did find and what you didn't find within the book of the Holy Bible, and especially about the bloodshed sacrifice for the remission of sins. And I'm going to ask you a question here. I'm not sure if it's a right question to ask, but the difference between the New and the Old Testament, you know, you've talked a little bit about that. So maybe we can, maybe you can expound on that for me and
sure.
for the audience, because it's, you know, the way I'm listening, the way I'm hearing you say that, is like maybe these two things weren't supposed to be put together. I don't know.
Well, the Bible itself is extremely complex and complicated. My book that I wrote sort of breaks it all down for the reader, because they haven't the time to make all the comparisons within the Old Testament prophets against the priests of the Old Testament versus the all the teachings of Jesus and John the Baptist. The best way I can break this all down, especially over the phone on your program, in a short period of time, is to describe it like this. And this is what's going on in the Bible according to my research, Rebecca.
Okay.
Is that there is a conflict between the prophets and the priests throughout the writings of the Old Testament, and that incorporates even parts of the Torah. And the Torah consists of the first five books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. This is considered the Torah to to Judaism, to Christianity, and Catholicism. The problem is the conflict begins in the Old Testament itself, not necessarily with Jesus. He sort of finalizes the conflict at the end. But the prophets that taught against the bloodshed sacrifice of animals for the remission of sins was Jeremiah, Isaiah, Hosea, Amos, and a couple of others that wrote specifically against these types of practices that were being conducted in the temple. So when John the Baptist comes along, and especially Jesus, they're coming from not from the temple priest's point of view, they're coming from the prophet's teachings. And this is why John the Baptist comes up with this baptism of water for the remission of sins, which is totally contrary to the temple sacrifice system that's being instituted in the temple. Now, the history of Israel has gone through a lot of changes from the time of the Exodus out of Egypt. You know, they go through their all their time in the wilderness, and then they eventually, according to the Bible, their first king comes up, Saul, and then King David and Solomon, and then they go down through the ranks of many kings afterwards, and then they get taken over. One half of the kingdom gets taken over by Assyria at a particular date, and another section gets taken over by the Babylonians. So it becomes very complex during this time frame that Israel's being taken over by other nations, other warring nations. So I focused a lot of my attention on the time that they were taken in by Babylon in the year 586, because Babylon had certain temple blood sacrifices being practiced there as well. And it is my contention that a lot of the writings in the Old Torah are also influenced by these Babylonian revisionists. This is also shared by a lot of other scholars as well. So I do not differ with them on this particular issue, that whenever one nation takes over another nation, they have a way of revising their history and incorporating their religion now under more of a Babylonian style temple. So the history of Israel goes from there, from 50 years later, after Babylon takes over Israel, the Persians come along and they overtake Babylon. And then,
so okay,
you know,
so hang on to that thought, and when we come back, we're gonna carry that out, because I think this is great information. You guys stay with us. We're going to be right back.
Fate Magazine, providing true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate Magazine, call now, 800-728-2730, or visit our website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730 or www.fatemag.com. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Be sure to check out Mark Kerr's debut CD, One Drink Away from the Blues, at www.cdbaby.com. This flawless debut performance earned Mark an induction into the Blues Hall of Fame as Ambassador to the Blues for the state of Louisiana. Also, it earned him a nomination for Musician of the Year in 2006 by the Academy of Texas Music. Mark Kerr, One Drink Away from the Blues at www.cdbaby.com.
Hello, I'm Jane Goodall, only half of the world's forests and wetlands that existed at the start of the 20th century still exist today. We must do a far better job of protecting wildlife habitats, or environmental chaos awaits those who follow us. If you own land you want kept safe forever, the Wildlife Land Trust can help. Call 1-800-729-SAVE, 1-800-729-SAVE.
Email Rebecca with your comments to mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com. You're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
All right. Welcome back. Thanks for staying with us. If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Lionel Parkinson. We are here talking about the Holy Virus. Specifically, the topic is about the Holy Bible. And Lionel, being a document examiner, comes at it with a very different approach, which is one of no emotion, but rather a fact-finding mission. So you left off in the first segment, so I'm going to kind of let Lionel here. I'm going to let you just go ahead and kind of pick it up and go with it, because I know you have a lot more to share with us today.
Right. The main gist of the whole Bible, though, is that it is recording a conflict between the prophets and the priests, and this is the reason why Jesus is always referring back in his teachings how the prophets are always being persecuted and killed over what they're trying to say within the nation of Israel. Israel went through a lot of changes, a lot of taking over of their wealth, and the people went into captivity again back in 586 BC by the Babylonians, and then later the Persians overtook the Babylonians and ended up taking all the people that were taken back into Babylon. They were allowed to be set free and go back into Jerusalem, but the problem is at this point in time the temple that is being rebuilt during the Persian era is nothing more than a Babylonian temple. So the history of Judaism, I believe, is being altered at this point in time because of their captivity under Babylon. Their leaders are being replaced by Babylonian leaders, and the Persians, when they overtook Babylon, they did not really want to change anything. They just wanted everybody to kind of just go back to the way that things were, but only under Persian rule. So they just go meandering on into the Roman era, and by the time John the Baptist and Jesus comes on the scene, they're going up against a temple that is Babylonian in nature. And my research has also uncovered that the animal sacrifices performed in Babylon were basically the same that is being practiced in the book of Leviticus. The same exact animals are being mentioned, which led me to believe that Judaism was so influenced by this blood of the covenant that it's difficult to distinguish whether or not the origin of this practice originated with Moses, or whether it was just backdated to that time to make it look like Moses practiced this, when in fact it was the Babylonians that really controlled the origin of this practice. So it's really difficult for me to just study this particular old belief system without coming to the conclusion that, one, the prophets taught against it, two, the origin was practiced by Babylon, and three, when John the Baptist and Jesus came along the scene, they taught very much against this practice as well. So there is this definite conflict that exists in the Old Testament concerning the belief that one's sins can be remitted on the practice of simply shedding the blood of animals on altars. So when Jesus and John the Baptist do arrive, they're changing this whole law. They're confronting this belief system and establishing a whole new interpretation of what the shedding of blood really means. And when you're reading in the New Testament, Jesus saying, for instance, in the book of John, if you don't mind me being just a little preachy here.
No, not at all. Go okay. Right ahead.
So we're just simply looking at what is given to us as a quote from Jesus. And as an examiner, I'm only interested in what Jesus says, not what anybody else is saying. So, I'm just trying to identify what his personality traits are telling me about this particular old practice. And he says in chapter 6, verse 53, truly, truly, I say unto you, except you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. It goes on to say, whoso eateth my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise him up at the last day. Goes on to say, for my flesh is meat indeed, and my blood is drink indeed. Now, he used this, what I call carnal word terminology, to deliberately throw off the carnal mind, because those that came out of the Pharisees and Sadducees, that Babylonian belief system that you have to shed blood for the remission of your sins, when he's talking, using their carnal words, they're thinking, okay, we gotta eat this guy and we gotta drink his blood. It's throwing them off, but he would secretly teach his disciples that his blood that he's going to shed for the remission of their sins is really just his doctrine. Because he's specifically talking about his body, and this is what the whole purpose of the Eucharist, whenever you take the bread and dip it into the fruit of the vine and you eat it, what you're trying to consume is what he taught throughout his ministry, and by applying that teachings, that would change you on the inside, and that is what causes the remission of sins. So there was no belief coming from John the Baptist and Jesus that you had to shed physical blood for the remission of sins, but rather the blood and flesh of Jesus represented his doctrine that you're supposed to consume instead. And that, when it is applied, would cause you to be right before God, or the Holy Father as he taught this. And that is the difference between the Old Testament belief system, where they believed in killing an animal for the remission of sins, versus just taking what Jesus actually taught, which is, first, stop believing in bloodshed sacrifices, because he was very much against that belief system. So by using this carnal word terminology, he could starve the wolves but feed his sheep at the same time, because those that understood the esoteric meaning behind his blood and flesh would understand what he meant, while those that rejected him and wanted to kill him would never be issued into his kingdom on the basis of knowledge, true knowledge.
Uh-huh.
So that is his approach of teaching people back in his day. she would just simply use their own words against them.
Well, that was that's actually pretty smart, wasn't it?
Well, he knew pretty much by talking to groups of people which ones were going to actually want to know more. And those that kept on following and following and following him would eventually understand what he meant. But I should also mention that the four Gospels in the King James Bible were only written by copyists. There is no evidence that indicates positively that we're dealing with writings directly from the apostles themselves. In fact, Luke and Mark are never listed as apostles. So in my comparison of the psychological and personality traits of Jesus, I kind of leaned toward the Matthew and John writings because that's about the best and the closest that I can come to the personality traits of Jesus. So I decided to start asking a very important question at this point in time. If this story of Jesus is really true, if we're going to find a real historical Jesus, it seems irresponsible for any religion to only produce mere copious forms of this man. Because if this is it, you know, as an examiner, they're not adequate enough to really know what he's trying to teach. Because in the chapter 14 of verse in the book of John, he's specifically laying down commandments that you're supposed to know and follow, but yet the list of those commandments are never given. It's really odd that so much has been edited out, pertinent information about this man, that I had to look outside the Bible to find what he was referring to as his commandments. And I was able to dig it out, a particular gospel version that was untainted by Rome and untainted by religion's agendas to try and manipulate the true historical Jesus. And the only one I could find, it was a gentleman back in 1892 by the name of Gideon Jasper Richard Ousley, which was a Christian, found a version in a Buddhist monastery in Tibet that appeared to be untainted. So I decided to examine that particular version, and it was written collectively by all 12 apostles, and it was held there, or at least placed there by an Essene community that wanted to keep the whole story of Jesus from being tainted and corrupted. And I found that this version, matching the personality traits of the four Gospels in the King James Bible up against the personality traits of the Gospel of the Holy Twelve, I could get a much better match of who this man really was. And I also found the 12 commandments that he's referring to in the book of John. So there was a lot of pertinent information in that version that do not show up in the four Gospels. So this again made it even more compelling for me to study this version along with the four Gospels of the King James Version.
So the commandments, would you care to elaborate on those at this time, or do you want to move into a different arena?
Well, I'd say that the 12 commandments is the gist of the teachings of Jesus, because without them, according to his teachings, those 12 commandments actually represent the key of knowledge that he said it was being stolen away by the lawyers in the book of Luke. So it was three times in the book of John, he's always referring to, if you keep my commandments. In fact, if I can look those up. It might be best if I read them. And
that's interesting while you're looking that up, because, you know, we've been taught that there was 10 commandments, and you're telling us that there's 12. So quite interesting. So this ought to prove to be interesting on these 12 commandments.
Yes, and to try and qualify these as the actual commandments of Jesus is going to be difficult, especially when they don't show up in the four Gospels.
Right.
So the best way I can qualify them is to check to make sure that the personality traits that do show up in the four Gospels do match the personality trait of the Jesus that is being presented to us in this particular version, or untainted, uncopyrighted version. And I should also mention that the Bibles today are being kicked out. There's so many different names for these Bibles anymore that they are not even agreeing with the old King James Version. So even within Christianity, they're having problems trying to accept these new versions. So as an examiner, I just like to get back to, okay, what is the original version of this so-called Gospel of Jesus? Because if the four Gospels of the King James Bible are just mere copies, written by copyists and not the actual apostles, then I've got a problem with putting together a good, accurate profile of who Jesus really was. So,
right.
So I'd much rather examine the originals. Like I've always told attorneys, I don't want photocopies of these documents, of the originals. Give me the originals, and I'll give you an accurate determination.
There you go.
So, but this is what it reads. And I'll just read the first three commandments, because I found those to be the most fascinating. And this is found in the Essene Community version that was apparently being held in a Buddhist monastery, and it was translated by this Christian man back in 1892. And I should also mention that it was the Essene Community is what John the Baptist came out of, and also Jesus. So these people that escaped the Roman slaughter of 70 AD were able to preserve what they believe to be is the most accurate version of the life and times of Jesus.
Okay.
So I figured, why not? You know, it's a better start than the four Gospels.
There you go.
So, you know, when I did that comparison, though, and this is the most important thing, is matching the personality traits of the four Gospels up against the personality traits of Jesus, I was able to find a match. And the stories are very similar. But I'll just read the first three commandments, because I think these 12 commandments should be released to the Christian community, because I think it's being suppressed. You cannot obtain these at any Christian bookstore, and I just think it would be important for them to at least examine this book and the 12 commandments that Jesus was so deliberately trying to convey to his apostles. But the first commandment reads like this: You shall not take away the life of any creature for your pleasure, nor for your profit, nor yet torment it. If you look at that commandment in itself goes so contrary to Western culture and the way we eat, the way we treat animals, the way the corporate world would never accept that commandment. If you really break it down, because the whole animal industry is larger than the oil industry, so I could see right there that there would be a major conflict between the corporate world that I believe controls institutionalized religion. I just, you know, found that would be a very, you know, there's a lot of profit to be made on the killing of animals or the selling of their, you know.
Absolutely, to be sure. And
sure to check out Mark Kerr's debut CD, One Drink Away from the Blues, at www.cdbaby.com. This flawless debut performance earned Mark an induction into the Blues Hall of Fame as Ambassador to the Blues for the state of Louisiana. Also, it earned him a nomination for Musician of the Year in 2006 by the Academy of Texas Music. Mark Kerr, One Drink Away from the Blues, at www.cdbaby.com.
Noni juice, used by Native Island healers to treat a variety of health problems. Super antioxidants. By keeping oxidants under control, the human body is better able to fight diseases and to recover from injuries. Pine bark, combats free radicals, may help in stress, fatigue, poor circulation, bruises, etc. But not all products such as these are created equal. Our Gardens products are made from the highest quality ingredients to be sure that you get the maximum health benefits from them. So check them out at perfectlyorganic.net. Let's get healthy.
Journeys with Rebecca is sponsored by Fate Magazine, providing true accounts of the strange and unknown for over 58 years. To receive your free copy of Fate Magazine, call 800-728-2730 or log on to FateMag.com.
Talk with an intuitive touch. Journeys with Rebecca.
All right, welcome back, and thank you so much for staying with us. Now, Lionel, in the last segment we left off, you had talked about the first commandment. We're going to be talking about the first three out of the 12, and if you'd like to just to continue on with the second commandment and to read that, absolutely phenomenal stuff.
Yes, and realize that this information has been suppressed for whatever reason. I don't know why it isn't being released, but at least on this program it is. So
yes.
The second one is, you shall not steal the goods of any, nor gather lands and riches to yourself beyond your need or use. It sort of just says it right there. It's very plain. Don't be greedy, I guess. That's the best way to look at that. Number three, you shall not eat the flesh nor drink the blood of any slaughtered creature, nor yet anything which brings disorder to your health or senses.
Interesting.
Well, yeah.
That's a huge statement.
When I was doing a quick study on the eating of animals, I was reading a lot of books by doctors that were overcoming cancer. And the one common denominator I found throughout reading their books is that they all recommend that you had to stop eating animal products in order to defeat cancer. So I thought that was information that seems to coincide with this commandment.
Wow.
But, yeah, it's a...
So we're not supposed to eat any meat? Does that include fish and all of that?
Well, it's not so much a commandment not to eat meat as it is to respect the life of what God has created on this planet, that mankind was based on the teachings of this book. Jesus is saying that man was created to be a caretaker of animals, not their undertaker. And it was always a test to the way you treat animals will eventually reflect in the way you will treat your fellow man later on in the course of your life. So I believe that this commandment is more or less a test in which to start out your life on. And these 12 commandments act like the very 12 internal organs of the new person that Jesus is trying to create within you. The same way you rely on the 12 major organs in your physical body, you rely on these 12 commandments as the internal organs of your new spirit body. And this is the kind of way he taught it within this book. Again, as an examiner, I'm just trying to relate this information out so that when you read this book or buy my book, which automatically incorporates this book, you'll get a good picture of what the true historical Jesus was like, according to this Essene community that not only brought him up, but also brought up John the Baptist.
Absolutely fascinating.
Now, to bring this together, the Old Testament conflict and the conflict between John the Baptist and the temple priest, the belief that one's sins are remitted through the shedding of the blood of innocent animals is being challenged by Jesus. And he believed specifically that in order to be forgiven by the Holy Father, and again, I have to go back to a scripture in the King James Bible, in the New Testament, in chapter 5 of Matthew, verse 7, he says, "Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy." Now, there is no mention that you're going to have to trust in Jesus dying on the cross for your sins in this statement. This particular teaching, along with a lot of other teachings within the four Gospels, led me to believe that Jesus not only taught against bloodshed sacrifices, but he was trying to get everybody to stop believing in this whole system of physically shed blood for the remission of sins. He also goes on to state that in order to be forgiven by, let's say, like, we'll just go to chapter 6 of Matthew, verse 14, "For if you forgive men their trespasses, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you forgive not men their trespasses, neither will your Father forgive your trespasses." All these teachings are telling you it's what you're going to have to do yourself is change your conduct toward others in order to be forgiven by God, not trust in an outward blood-shedding sacrifice that Christianity is telling you that Jesus is going to perform for you on the cross. So this all led to one important question in my mind. If Jesus didn't go to the cross to die for your sins or my sins, why did he go to the cross at all? Because this is a very legitimate and logical question to ask.
Absolutely.
At this point. And the answer that I came up with, I put it beautifully in my book, but I'll try and surmise it the best I can here, is that when the Pharisees and Sadducees came to him and asked him, "By whose authority and by what authority do you do these things, such as kick our people out of the temple and whip them with cords and release the animals, and by whose authority do you do these things?" You know, he kept on referring them back to John the Baptist by saying, "The doctrine of John the Baptist, did it come from heaven or did it come from men?" And they wouldn't answer that question. So there was this conflict that was going back. Okay, and I got to thinking, okay, he's going to the cross. He knows he's going to get killed. He's already stomped on everybody's foot on the high religious level. They're after him, but they could not kill him under their Jewish law, because they're under Roman occupation at this time. So they found a law that would kill him, and that was a law against Caesar. Anybody claiming to be a king was in violation of a Roman law. So that is why Jesus was finally placed on the cross and crucified. But he only went there, and he told these Pharisees and Sadducees, "If you destroy this temple of mine, I'll raise it in 3 days. That is the sign that I'll give you to show you that my doctrine is above your doctrine of animal bloodshed." This is the reason why he attacked him inside the temple and said that my father's house is a house of prayer, not a house of thieves. And I could only come up with that particular reason why Jesus went along with going to the cross. He wanted to leave a sign throughout all the generations that a resurrection would be the only sign that could prove that his doctrine and teachings were the only way that he could be forgiven.
Are you looking for a low-cost way to drink the purest water possible? We know that many of you are concerned about the purity of the water you drink, and having a good source of pure water is vitally important. We've discovered a new gravity water filtration system, the Our Garden Pure Water System. Now, here are some of the features that make this product unique. Multi-layers of filtration, a ceramic pre-filter, activated carbon filter, a mineral bead layer, as well as natural conditioning through mineral stones, and the final stage, magnetic restructuring. An excellent water system at a great price. This remarkable water purifier is all you'll ever need to produce great tasting water free of harmful contaminants, all 100% risk-free. Experience the pleasure of great tasting water or your water system today. www.perfectlyorganic.net. That's perfectlyorganic.net.
I don't get it. Why aren't people buying our tennis balls?
You got me.
I mean, they're fuzzy, they're yellow, they're bouncy.
Oh, well, no doubt about it. We have the bounciest balls in the business.
If people knew how bouncy our balls
are, they would be bouncing on tennis courts from North Carolina to California.
Instead, they buy our competitors' clearly inferior balls.
Smack their balls a few hundred times and the fuzz falls right off.
And soon their balls are totally bald and barely bouncy at all.
What do we need to do to get people to try our tennis balls?
We gotta get the word out.
Word out. Hey! Maybe we should advertise.
Now, that costs money, and we don't have much money.
So, yeah, I don't want to advertise until we have more money.
Which we'll get when we sell more balls and
make some profit.
So we don't need to advertise. We just need to wait.
For what?
For profits.
You're absolutely right.
Sometimes I'm so brilliant I actually scare myself.
Yeah, gave me goosebumps.
Can I see one?
Hold up.
While you're waiting, your competitors aren't. They know something you don't know. It's called advertising, and it works. So get on the ball. This message brought to you by this station, the Radio Advertising Bureau, and produced by the famous Radio Ranch.
The songs on your radio are brought to you by Soundwave's Frequency and Amplitude. By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in technology. But parents can help make it fun. Visit girlsgotech.org. A message from the Girl Scouts and Ad Council.
Check out Rebecca's website for the latest Journeys news and more. Log on to www.journeyswithrebecca.com.
Thanks for staying with me today. I am so grateful to have Lionel Parkinson on talking about the Holy Virus as our guest today. I am so sure that many of you out there probably thought you might have an idea of what this was about, and it's not about what we thought it was at all. Although controversial, I believe that the truth needs to be shared, and I believe that Lionel has done a very, very good job in sharing that information with us. I urge you to go to his website. That's theholyvirus.net. And check it out. Check out more about the book. Go get the book. And, of course, if you'd like to have that link, it's right there on my website at journeyswithrebecca.com. You can certainly do that. If you have missed a show, you can also check out the archives there on the Journeys with Rebecca Radio website. Now, you know, I do have some very thought-provoking guests. We're going to have more coming up. As many of you know, I have been on vacation. I'm looking forward to my return. I have many guests lined up, but just to name a couple of them is going to be Philip Gardner. He will return, and he's going to be here talking about secret societies. We're also going to have Mark Kimmel back on, Birthing a New Civilization. Fabulous man. Wrote The Trillion, The Decimal, and another book, and so I urge you to go check him out. And I'm going to have some return guests. I'm going to be inviting back Knight and Warbeck onto the live show, which, speaking of which, if you can check it out, that's Saturdays at 8 p.m. Central Time, right here on KC Online Radio. And we will also be bringing back Nancy Miller Ogren. We'll be taking those mailbag questions again on the live show. So email me, mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com. I thank each and every one of you for listening, and I'm so grateful to be able to bring all these wonderful guests and the information to you. So, until we meet again, where will your life's journey lead you? Many blessings and good night.